Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the second Stratomatic podcast. I'm your host, Steve Ryder. On the phone with me is Glenn Guza. We're going to talk a little bit about veterans and the card-making process. Glenn, in the last podcast, you kind of teased a little bit about the card-making process, how it's more complicated than the baseball cards. I want to get a little bit deeper. How is the football card-making process more complicated than baseball?
In football, there are many more steps we have to go through. There's many more spreadsheets, and each step is more complicated. The spreadsheets themselves are more complicated than the baseball ones. That's the easy answer. The probably the more interesting answer for the viewers, listeners here, is that football, of course, is a much shorter season. Statistics can be much more volatile. The teams don't play everybody else. And so the balancing of that strength of schedule, the looking for the outlier performances, have consideration. There are, when I work on the ratings for 0, 4, 5, 6, it takes weeks because there are at least, there's about a dozen different factors that have to be balanced. In one respect, we start with last year's rating and say, okay, it's got better, it's got worse. We have some things to go by. We have things like all-pro selections. We have Pro Bowl votes, the guys who are really voted in instead of the guys who are merely selected later as injury replacements or Super Bowl replacements. Those don't count as much. We're also looking, we have experts that watch every game, every play, and give us their analyses. We do a lot of reading from a lot of different sources that are consistent followers of the teams. And we also have a couple of different statistical analyses that we put into the mix. It then becomes more complicated than that. It's not just taking all the data, all the reports. It's a matter of the team performance of how is this guy relative to his team? Was he the team's best defender? Was he the best guy in the secondary? Was he the problem? We also are looking at the integrity of the rating across the set. And this is, of course, where you get the most disagreement among fans. It's like, this guy from this team is better than that guy from that team. Juggling act is something that causes me a lot of angst at times about making sure we get it just as right as we can get it. And it becomes more difficult yet because with only four ratings, 0, 4, 5, 6, there are a lot of borderline guys. And so which guy should get that 4, which guy should get that 5? Because Stratomatic has a certain number of 6s, a certain number of 5s, a certain number of 4s, a certain number of 0s every year. There can be some slight fluctuation, and there's definitely fluctuation in terms of, say, defensive linemen, linebackers, and secondary. But over the course of looking at all the defenders, there will be a certain number of 6s, 5s, 4s, and 0s. So all of these things are being weighed, and it's tricky at times, but it's fascinating to do. I really enjoy doing it.
How long have you been doing the football ratings?
I've been doing the football ratings for about 5 seasons. I think I started with the 2007 season, but there was 1 year where Hal picked it up while I was doing a lot of writing for the website products.
You mentioned to me wide receivers are especially difficult to rate. Looking statistically at it, you think, okay, yeah, when you break it down, there seems to be a certain pattern when it comes to wide receiver cards. But you mentioned to me it's difficult. How so?
Well, because you wouldn't believe how many steps are involved. I mean, you'd think, okay, here's the stats, here's the guy's number of catches, here's his yards per catch. That'll tell you something about how many long passes you should catch, how many short passes versus flat passes. But it's not that simple. We look not only at the statistical thing, but then we add another layer of statistics like balls in the air. It's not just the guy's average gain. It's how many balls does he catch at different distances. We have strength of schedule to put into that. And then something that's easily overlooked by fans is there a dominant receiver on the team that made it easier for other guys to get open? If you have a dominant receiver like Randy Moss in his prime, who was getting double-teamed all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it means Wes Welker is free for single coverage, then you have to basically say, well, you know, we might want to upgrade Moss's ability here because we know he's going to need that extra ability in order to survive the double teams.
Hmm.
But meanwhile, Welker might get knocked out a little bit because he's hardly ever going to see the double teams with a guy like Moss on his team. So, you know, Calvin Johnson has that effect in Detroit. But some teams have a more balanced passing attack. They spread it around, and that's not as big a factor. Other teams, they've got that one receiver who just overshadows everything else and really is the way the offense is run around, the passing offense is dictating. Dictate the defense as well. This is also true, and I think people have known this for a longer time, that you have a quarterback who had good stats, but he had a terrible running game to help him. He's going to need a better card to get those stats. Teams are going to get some pass all the time. The reverse is true. You have a guy who is a very good runner with a weak quarterback. You know, the runner is going to need some help. His ratings, because teams are going to be guessing run a lot more often. They're going to be key on this guy a lot more often. So it's a balancing act with the schedule. It's a balancing act with the integrity of the set. It's a balancing act within the team. And those factors are not always comfortably in alignment with each other. That's why it's so challenging.
Where do you get a lot of these stats in terms for the wide receiver, balls in the air?
Stratomatic hires a service. I'm not going to identify the service, but hires a service to provide that data every year. And then there are some additional statistical services that are available online that we take a look at that have to do with such things as how many snaps did the guy really play in passing situations. We're talking about maybe defenders now.
Yeah.
We could be talking about even such things that are published as how many times was a defensive back penalized in coverage. That can help decide an issue when a guy is borderline. He may be making a lot of good plays, but he may also be giving up a lot of good plays by third down penalties, things like that. So we're Stratomatic in all of its games, wants to have statistical integrity and wants the stats to come out well. Football is the toughest one for that to happen because it's such a short schedule where one or two games of distortion can really blow out the stats. And because the schedule is not anywhere near balanced, teams have a very different set of opponents.
Yeah, I remember reading in Stratomatic Fanatics, the book that you wrote about Stratomatic, that in the baseball process, you guys will often consult former scouts, current scouts, maybe even some GMs. Do you guys do the same thing for football? Do you guys have a list of people that you have on speed dial that you call up and ask them the questions?
With baseball, that process is easier to come by in terms of scouts for each team. But yes, we do have people who are experts on certain teams, and then we have experts that we hire that actually are our scouting services that examine the entire NFL and watch every game and watch every play and rate these players.
Very cool.
And, you know, we don't take any one source as gospel, although something that's close to it is if a guy's a Pro Bowl starter, he's very likely to be a six.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the closest thing to gospel, certainly if he's all pro. But if everything else, you know, we're looking at the profile of the guy. Statistical pattern, okay, previous rating, that's a big one. Pro Bowl status, expert stuff, the raise the balance within the team across the set. We look at this profile, and if a guy comes out pretty consistent six, that's easy. A lot more guys are going to be borderline between a 4 and a 5 or 0 and a 4 or 5 and 6.
All right, let's move on to the veterans. London Fletcher, he's a 6'5". The guy just doesn't seem to age. What's up?
Well, that's the thing. We keep waiting. You know, the whole NFL keeps waiting. Here's this guy who's undersized and who, you know, forever wasn't getting put into the Pro Bowl. But everybody says he's been the heart of this defense. He plays with huge heart. He's been consistent throughout his career, and, you know, everybody's expecting him to tail off, but all the reports we had on him last year was there was no tail off. And he was keeping that defense together for a while it was going through some changes last year. So, Fletcher got the nod. I think now, refresh my memory, Fletcher was in the Pro Bowl last year?
I don't have that in front of me.
I think he was. I think, wasn't it this past year that he finally got in after a long wait? So it was like one more thing. It says Fletcher is not declining.
All right. Player number two that we're going to look at, Chris Snee. He got a rating of 5.7. He didn't get that 6-run block rating. A lot of guys have started to really depend on that 6-run block rating. What happened?
Well, the New York Giants running game was a disaster. It was the worst running game in the league.
Makes sense.
I mean, so, you know, right there would tell you the offensive line is going to suffer. Now, okay, so it can rise above for some of the other considerations we talked about, but Snee lost his Pro Bowl starter status. So, if my memory is correct, I'm driving right now across country and I don't have my notes in front of me, and it's kind of hard to recall 1,000 football players.
Yeah.
So just from memory right now, especially for me, it's months after the ratings process. But Snee didn't have the accolades he had in previous years. The Giants pass blocked well, and Snee was bad. And he still ended up as the best blocker on the Giants for run block, but the run game was a disaster for the Giants last year, and nobody would have predicted that.
Player number three, another veteran that people have been expecting to take a drop, and he finally really has. Rondé Barber dropped to a 4. I know Tampa's defense wasn't as good as previous decades almost. Has age finally caught up with Rondé Barber?
Well, Rondé Barber's at the end of the line. And one of the things for people who maybe don't follow the Bucs game in and game out may not realize how bad that defense was. The secondary missed more tackles than any secondary in the league. And they missed a bunch. They were way more than anybody else in the league. And Barber, for once in his life, was unreliable. This was unusual for Barber. So Rondé doesn't have much left, according to what we've read all season long. And the Bucs were just terrible defensively. Now, some of that had to do with the middle of the line. Their rookie middle linebacker, Mason Foster, was not effective. But the secondary was pretty much a disaster as well.
Two more guys, and they're both Denver Broncos, just up the road from me here in Colorado Springs. Champ Bailey, a lot of people here in Colorado have talked about Champ really is starting to show his age, but he got a 6. Was it the Pro Bowl vote? Was it just the fact that he was a Pro Bowler?
That was a big, big factor. I was ready to look at him as a 5. The reading on him was mixed. There were some things in there saying, you know, well, he's not the champ of old, but he's still awfully effective. That you can see that he's a big step, but we're talking about a guy who is super fast to begin with. He was a guy who was known as a shutdown corner, although a guy like Peter King in Sports Illustrated would tell you, there are no such things as shutdown corners in a league where the average completion rate is 61%. Darrell Revis is a shutdown corner, but there aren't many other guys who could fit that description. Asamoah, you know, fit that description last year in Oakland, for sure. But Bailey still was strong. He wasn't the champ we're used to. He could have been a five. He was borderline case. The Pro Bowl vote mattered a lot.
And the last guy, Brian Dawkins, going out with a four.
Well, there was no way Brian was going to be a five. I mean, Brian was one of the, he'll be in the Hall of Fame, is one of the great safeties of all time, tremendous leader, brought out the best in his teammates, which is a very rare and precious commodity, a virtue for any athlete. But Brian missed time last year. He wasn't even the best safety on the team. But, a lot for a significant portion of the season. Four was the best we could do for him.
There we go. Five players, five veterans, that all, four of which are coming towards the end of their careers, and there are their ratings. Thanks a lot, Glenn, for joining me here on podcast number 2. Drive safe, man.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
All right, be sure to tune in to podcast number 3, where Glenn and I will talk about 4 or 5 guys, maybe even 6, that Derby guy was 2 ratings off. So we're going to break some hearts. We're going to make some people very happy. Thanks for listening to Stratomatic podcast number 2. I'm your host, Steve Ryder. This podcast has been a Right Turn Media production. If you have any topics, comments, suggestions, be sure to email me, commish@herculeanfootball.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.